Governor Herbert, and pot. I'm Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Perfect prison possibilities. Chris Blake on the right.
And Natalie Gochner in the center talking about politicians. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. But first, this news.
And a lot of peas.
I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and I am joined on the right by political guru Chris Blake.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Nice to have you on the show, Chris, filling in for the Speaker of the House, Greg Hughes. And on the left, Jim DeBacchus. Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Morning. Good morning. Good morning.
Okay. So, you know, I like the written language. I like to do some alliteration. So I'm thinking today we're going to talk about prison, pot, and politicians. How do you like that?
Perfect.
Very good, Chris. Very good. So let's go to polls, another P, and talk for just a minute about our Utah congressional delegation. Representative Stewart, Bishop, Chaffetz, and Love. You know, polls show that they just aren't getting the love that maybe they deserve. All of them have favorability ratings either right at about 53% or lower. Chaffetz gets the best at the 53. In the case of Stewart, a huge portion don't even know who he is. Chris, these are all Republicans. What do you make of that?
Well, I make a couple of things. One, they've won elections, and so that's what matters most. Is they've won the poll that matters, and I expect that all of them will do so again here in 2016. Ultimately, I think the Congress and what's going on, you wrote a great op-ed recently about constructive Republicanism,
Very good, I think was the term. Yeah.
And we're not seeing that in D.C.
And they're being penalized for.
Penalized, another good P word. But they're absolutely being penalized by what the dysfunction we're seeing in Washington, D.C., and people aren't very happy about that. But by and large, I think those numbers are pretty strong. So I don't think they have anything to be concerned about electorally, but I hope that they see it as a concern about what's going on in Washington.
Jim, I just heard him say that under 50% favorability is pretty strong.
Look, I couldn't disagree with my good friend Chris Moore. They are the dysfunction in Washington. I mean, they are the whole problem. They're a little smug. They're playing off to the political right. Chris Stewart is supposed to represent virtually all of Salt Lake City. Mr. Pollution, Mr. Public Lands. I mean, he is, if he got 3 votes in Salt Lake City, I would be astonished. Of course, it's gerrymandered, so it'll be a close race if the Democrats could actually come up with a decent candidate and get the candidates some money, which I'm not sure they can. But you got Mia Love, who I predict will lose re-election. There's 2 places for the other party to kind of march into an election. One is when the incumbent leaves, and the second is after that first term. Statistically, legislators are very vulnerable. Mr. Owens has been in Washington this last week. He's talking to people. He's raising money. He is doing really well in the polls. He only lost by less than 7,000 votes in an off-year election. Off-year elections in our state, anyway, strongly favor the Republicans. Mia Love, watch out and enjoy your time in Washington, and I hope you didn't take more than a 2-year lease.
Interesting observations, Jim. How about over in Senator Lee's case, where at least the polling that I've been looking at shows that he's recovered a lot of ground and is on his way to another 6 years?
Well, it's like a bad nightmare, but it's looking more and more. I don't see any Republicans standing up. Now they should be raising money. They should be out there. I don't see any Democrats that are serious. I mean, I'm sure we'll have somebody, but I'm afraid it's a bad part of our system that somebody can go out and raise $15, $20, $25 million, and then everybody just backs off.
And I think Mike has done a great job. We've talked a little bit about this on the show, about how he really has worked on his image and coming up with really practical, pragmatic, conservative solutions to a number of issues. And I give him credit for doing that and think that he has done that work. It really is who Mike is. Mike is a little bit wonky, and I mean that in a good way. Mm-hmm. And he's showing that side of him, and I think it's really you know, he's making inroads with Utahns.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to keep watching these as the election day gets closer. Something else happened quite exciting in our community, and I think it turned out pretty well, but Mitt Romney goes in and boxes with Holyfield. Is it Evander?
Evander Holyfield.
Evander Holyfield. Two rounds.
Don't you have a son named Evander?
I don't. Theodore. Oh, okay. <son's> But you know, what a gutsy and risky thing for Mitt Romney to do, to go in the boxing match as a, I don't know how old he is.
Hey, he looked pretty good, too, you know,
and
for whatever he is.
And
I mean, he had his shirt off. He was there. I give the guy enormous credit just for taking his shirt off in public like that. It was his best performance today.
On Meet the Press, you know, the woman basically said, you know, for someone who lost an election, he has done really well publicly. And I thought that was kind of an interesting observation. How did you see that, Chris?
Yeah, I loved it. I particularly loved the picture of Ann and Mike as his entourage. Mike Leavitt and Ann Romney as they brought him into the ring. But kudos to the governor. You know, I think he's taken a position. We've seen others do this. Bob Dole was in a similar position, kind of had a bounce after the election. Then he started selling Viagra. So hopefully
that was sort of a problem.
Yeah,
in some
hopefully
way.
Governor Romney doesn't go that direction. But certainly he's been a practical problem solver, talker. And I think people respect him. And we're seeing the Mitt that I wish we saw during the election. The genuine person that he is. I just don't think people connected with him like we see him today.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, let's talk a little bit about what Governor Herbert did this, I think it was this past week, where he seemed to speak with a little bit more clarity about his willingness to consider the legalization of medical marijuana.
Speak with clarity on pot, huh? Look, you got to put this in the context. From my perspective, there is only one reason that hardcore social conservative, but very amiable, Gary Herbert is embracing pot. And it doesn't have anything to do with policy or human rights or doing the right thing for the medically needy. It has to do with a self-funded multimillionaire who is probably going to be his competition in the Republican primary, a terrific libertarian who has got that part of the Republican Party all stirred up.
Speaking about Jonathan Johnson.
Jonathan Johnson, yeah. Who's somebody we probably should talk about sometime other than right now, perhaps. But I'm saying this is sheer raw political calculation. And it has nothing to do, I suspect, with a change of heart by Governor Herbert. And should the governor be reelected, I am sure that it'll be the first thing in the discard barrel.
Chris, you follow Capitol Hill closely.
So cynical. But, you know, I think that it's simpler. We've talked a little bit about this. It is politics from the perspective of, I think that the Republican Party is becoming more libertarian on this issue. The focus is changing on marijuana. And the governor is understanding that. He's willing to research and look into it. I give him credit for that. It's what he should do. We're seeing a number of representatives and senators take a different look at this. And I think it's an interesting issue and one that I don't think is going to pass immediately. But it's had more momentum than I ever thought it would
have. Tell us just a little bit about Senator Mark Madsen, who's really been the leader on this. I guess this only failed in the Senate by like one vote during the session.
Yeah, by one vote. Senator Madsen is an interesting individual. And I'd describe him as sort of a Republican libertarian leaning type individual. Mark has a really compelling story about some of the back injuries that he suffered and not being able to find the type of medicine or relief that he needed until his doctor prescribed and told him to consider medical marijuana. And it's something he's found relief in. And so I think that there's been some really compelling stories on Capitol Hill from mothers and others that have really struggled with something and needed some relief that isn't coming from your traditional prescription drugs.
So when Senator Madsen wants that relief, he crosses over to Colorado and smokes a joint? I mean, how does it work?
That's what he's saying.
Well, just to correct you now, Mark is the grandson of Ezra Taft Benson. He's very conservative, but I would characterize him as a libertarian who leans Republican rather than the other way around. And his law did not allow for lighting up cannabis.
Right.
So
right.
He probably goes and sprays it rather than actually lighting up. So no
worm.
Tobacco is involved.
There we go. Oh,
I love it. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Chris Blake and Jim DeBacchus. In our next segment, we're going to talk about the prison.
Filling in for Greg Hughes on the right, I'm Chris Blake.
Filling in for the inarticulate Jim DeBacchus on the left, I'm somebody else.
And I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Okay, we've talked about the prison, I don't know, any number of times, and it just is the story that won't go away. Public hearings occurring this week. We've got Mayor Becker and the City Council, Salt Lake City Council, coming out seeking residents' help to oppose the prison in Salt Lake City. Chris, you're on Capitol Hill all the time. When will this end? When will we have clarity as the public about what's going on? Where will this prison go?
Well, it's part of the public process, and let's applaud the legislature for the work they're doing. It's difficult to go through a public process with all the transparency, everyone being able to look in, see the decisions mm-hmm. that are being made, because it leads to ongoing stories and consternation. I think here's the key. The prison is moving. And
that has not changed in your mind.
That has not changed. This prison is moving. I think it's the right thing to do personally. I've always believed that. And it's time for it to go someplace else. There's too much economic opportunity and development in Draper where it's located. I understand why cities and people are concerned about where it's going. Mm-hmm. And that's an understandable concern. But they're going to find a good location. They're going to identify it. And then it's going to go through a legislative process and be voted on. And I would guesstimate that's going to be sometime in August and September. And I'm excited. I think it's good for the state of Utah to make this change.
Jim, you once had a short stint at running for Salt Lake City mayor.
And
you know, this would obviously be a big issue in any kind of campaign. But do you get why the location in Salt Lake City is actually a pretty good choice?
Well, no, I don't get that.
There's no neighborhood. I mean, there's infrastructure. You know, it's close to everything. The city gets an advantage out of it because they get more tax capacity.
Look, I believe that the prison, we ought to – it depends what they do with the Draper property. That is the last big open space in our whole Salt Lake Valley. It's wired in with transportation. It calls for vision.
Mm-hmm.
If the legislature does the expedient thing – and turns it around and gives it to a few developers and they build houses and there's a few strip malls and it just becomes another blob, it will have been wasted.
Mm-hmm.
If, on the other hand, the state will take a long-term approach and recognize the almost sacredness of that piece of land in that it's unique. If we had a campus of the University of Utah down there, if we used some innovation, if we created a research park, if we created the portal for 10 or 15 Adobes, if we take the time and stop worrying about some debt because we've got to pay $350 or $400 million for the new prison. So if it's a turnaround, we got to get the money, we got to pay for this, we got to do this right away, and we forgo this generational opportunity to really create the kind of jobs that everybody in Utah sees as the future, we will have hit a grand slam home run. If, on the other hand, it just becomes another bleep and bloop, then it will have been a complete waste. And I'm not sure that even the state recognizes which direction it's going to go. We'll see what kind of long-term thinking our legislature is capable of.
And I agree with Jim. And I think Draper City and the cities around that area, Mayor Walker in that area, Speaker Hughes, it's his district. I think they share that vision. And so I think investing in a long-term decision-making and planning process, you know, we're just at step one, which is figuring out a new location for the mm-hmm. prison so we can look at that second step, which is equally huge and significant. But I think the state is invested in that and understands it. And you have companies like Adobe that Jim mentioned and others that have said, we would have located on that site. And so we do need to make sure that that site becomes a grand slam and not just the same old, same old. And I agree with that.
Yeah. Well, so I think we could all agree that we want to see that property serve a public interest, and that means that it grows our economy and not just redistributes it through retail and housing, that kind of thing. But the bigger question is, where are they going to put this thing? Not that it's bigger in scope, but just they've got to figure that out. And I've thrown out sort of off the air, but why didn't we have communities like bid for this?
Well, I think it's a great suggestion, Natalie, and, you know, we're kind of past that point. If you go online and look at the video, you'll see, I mean, when they go to each of these four sites that have been identified.
Remind our listeners where they are.
Salt Lake City, there's one out in Tooele, there's one
Eagle
in Eagle Mountain.
Mountain,
and I don't know where the fourth one is. Maybe it's also in Twillout, further in Grantsville. But when you go and look at these sites, and they have a video showing, they really are in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And some of these sites are constrained. The site in Salt Lake City, for example, is constrained by the lake and the freeway, and there's not a lot of opportunity and room for growth out there. I mean, if you want to put a neighborhood out there, it's going to be by the airport anyway, which most people wouldn't want to live near anyway. Mm-hmm. So there are some limitations there. And some of these other sites have limitations. Admittedly, you know, there's going to be growth in a lot of these communities, and probably 40, 50, 60 years from now, they're going to be debating the same kind of thing. But it's important that we recognize how strategic Draper is, make sure that's a home run, and then find a good site that hopefully is constrained for more than 60 years.
You know, I wanted to just do a shout-out for Senator Stevenson and Representative Brad Wilson.
Jerry Stevenson.
Get that right. That
do not want to be shouting out for Howard.
It's okay. But who are really taking a leadership role on the prison relocation. I know there might be others. Those are just the two that I've worked with most closely.
Those are two of the key ones, no question.
And they are incredibly capable people to help with this decision. So
frankly, one of the things that irritates me is a commonly repeated, what I think is a myth, and often by Democrats, that somehow this is all motivated by legislators and people who want to make money in Draper, and that it's all a big giant hoax. I know Jerry Stevenson.
This is service.
This is terrific service.
Yeah.
I just don't think that's part of it. But I think in the broad picture, again, let's go back up to 50,000 feet. From the moment pioneers arrived, or very closely to the moment, we built on the very outskirts a prison mm-hmm. in Sugar House. And that lasted us until the 1950s. Yep. And it was part of the city. And so we moved out to the outer edges of the planet, to Draper. We built it out there, and we've been out there 60, 70 years. Now, as we look to the next 50, 60, 70 years, we need to understand what's going to happen with growth. That's why I think Salt Lake is a bad decision. It's going that urban, the biggest growth in our city in Salt Lake is going to be in that quadrant. That's where our Adobe's close to the airport. That's where our serious development is going to go. That's where our possibilities are. Plus, it's the only place with problems with the ecology there. There are serious issues about the land there. So I am not just because it's in my backyard, but as you look at the giant growth that's going to happen in our state, that is probably not a very good place to put the prison.
You know, I just would add that if you pulled the state's most recent jobs report and looked at county job growth, you would find somewhere between, depending on the month, 6 to 10 counties in this state that are actually contracting in size. Their economies are getting smaller each year. It strikes me that that might be something to be thinking about, that we ought to get over this fact that the prison has to be so close to the urban area, and that maybe it makes sense to put it as an economic development engine in the coal counties, in Carbon, in Emery. I don't know. It's just a thought.
You know, and Jim made a great point about this issue, and that is that there has been a real benefit to the prison and the prisoners, I would imagine, by the donation of service by a lot of Utahns and by members of the LDS Church. And it goes beyond that, of course, but they specifically call
be
people
close
to do
the volunteers.
That. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so there are benefits to being there, families being close, access to hospitals and the court system. But I tend to agree with you. I wish that we'd look a little bit further afield, because I think there would be communities out there saying we want it.
Yeah, we want the jobs. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, joined by Chris Blake and Senator Jim DeBacchus. Another sort of relocation kind of issue is homeless services in our state. We talk about this from time to time, but it just keeps hitting the headlines where we have this very concentrated homeless population on the west side of Salt Lake City. And boy, does it seem to be large. And to a lot of people, I'll speak on behalf of women who listen to the show, intimidating, scary.
That's scary for me, too.
Okay. Well, and I realize that the panhandling issue and the homeless service issue are two very distinct issues, separate issues. But in any way, shape, or form, we've got to elevate this to be a top-of-mind issue for this state to solve. Chris, you have something you want to add there?
I think you're absolutely right. I look at that west side of Salt Lake City that has really started to open up. There's great opportunity out there. I drive out on Second South quite a bit on the west side. And that the city's creating an RDA around that area.
There's Central Station.
The Central Station. There's the intermodal mm-hmm. hub. And if you get off there at the intermodal hub and you're going to walk to a hotel, it could be a scary little walk
Absolutely.
Through there. And so I think it is something that the city is going to have to tackle. I applaud those in leadership positions or tap, but I don't have an answer, and I don't know what it is.
Jim, I want to do the kind of liberal-conservative thing here. So the conservative thing to me is, you know, there is opportunity here to redevelop that land and relocate these services and pay for them with that redevelopment. But sort of there's this sort of liberal side of the state that won't let that happen.
No, I think you're reading this all wrong.
Let's hear it.
I think that this is kind of the government of China versus its people kind of issue.
Okay.
That is, if you remember when Steve Holbrook years ago really got together with Harris Simmons and a group of community leaders and they built that homeless shelter, that was an unwanted part of the city mm-hmm. until Mayor Cordini came and created Gateway and
moved
took
the rail
that,
lines.
Yeah, and did all of that. So now you have an interesting thing. As the city has grown and as it starts to move west, you have developers and a city saying, hey, that's valuable land. We want that. You know, there we go. What I'm saying is there may well be a better solution. There has to be a better solution than what's out there now. It's just a catastrophe. But you know what? I want Mitt Romney and Bain Capital on the side of the homeless people negotiating for that land, not patsies appointed by the city who are willing, ready, and able to give away that property to the developer that comes along that's going to get the city out of the mess. We need to squeeze a fair price for that property so that we can then take that money and the homeless situation can be put and developed in a way that is really going to be helpful and not just have some developers and the city get rid of a big mess and move it somewhere else.
Well, and is it fair that Salt Lake City shoulders so much of a burden here? I mean, we concentrate this by concentrating the services. Would it not make sense to spread this out more?
I think we ought to send them to Provo.
Well, and the reality is you have a number of cities like that, Provo or Ogden,
Mid-Dale's
Salt Lake,
another good one.
That do end up shouldering a lot of those services. Is it fair? Probably not. There are advantages and disadvantages. One of the advantages Salt Lake City has is a lot of people come here. And, you know, it probably attracts some of that because there are a lot of people here. So there's pros and cons to it from both sides, if you will.
Well, I'm confident we're going to be talking about this some more on both sides of the aisle. Well, it's time to go to our gripes. Jim, what do you got queued up?
I just came from the interim on Capitol Hill yesterday and on the tax committee. And it's actually somewhat interesting, which is shocking to me.
But you're new on this committee. This is a new assignment for
you.
Yeah,
uh-huh. Relatively new. Mm-hmm. So Senator Henderson is the co-chair, and she always packs a good meeting. So here was the issue today. There are 13 people in the state of Utah that spend or corporations that spend $100,000 or more a year on their life insurance premium. Mm-hmm. So right now you pay 2.25% on your premium. What this proposed law would do would lower everything above the first $100,000 to 0.08% for the premium. Give me a break. I mean, this is like the best lobbyists in the state up there in their expensive shoes, and they're presenting this with a straight face like this is going to help the working people of Utah.
It's 13 people.
It helps 13 people, and it robs our school children of money, and we see that a bunch on the tax commission.
I just make the observation that that's about one family in Utah with our family sizes.
Right.
Okay, good.
My gripe today is the discrepancy that's going on in the media right now on coverage of the issue in Salt Lake County between Mayor McAdams and Representative Justin Miller. If this was Republicans, it would be a front page story. We'd be going berserk, going crazy every day, and it's crickets out there. So that's my gripe.
Just really
today.
Quiet.
Really
yeah.
quiet.
And is there anything new on it, Chris?
Nothing that I know.
Maybe that would be the media's justification. I don't know. I'm just
they
saying.
Need to dig. They dig on Republicans.
They need to dig. All right. My gripe, I serve on the Salt Lake City International Airport Board. At a board meeting this week, the TSA gave their report on what they've been confiscating from passengers. And these are legal items, but they're not legal on aircraft. And they put on a table just what a sampling of what been had collected in just this month. Lots of knives, whiskey, big things of whiskey, 23 firearms so far this year, by the way, that have been trying to get through TSA. And he said, by and large, they're all loaded because, you know, people don't carry firearms that aren't loaded. And then there was this gem, at least on the table there, they had 5 hand grenades. I mean, who even has hand grenades?
One person or
I don't know how it worked out, but it was very visual and TSA showing that. So my gripe is, come on, people. When you're traveling, think through your luggage. Leave the dangerous stuff.
Leave the hand grenades home.
This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner, produced by Ross Chambliss. Thanks for listening.